As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Welcome to The Audible, presented by Trader Joe's. I'm Stuart Mandel. Not joined, as always, by Bruce Feldman. Bruce is at the Combine, and he's so wrapped up in the Combine, which is like his, you know, sweet spot, if you will. He couldn't spare an hour to record the Audible. So I brought in our good friend of the podcast, The Athletic's own Chris Vanini, who is not at the Combine. And are you a Combine guy? Do you watch the workouts on NFL Network?
I'll watch it. You know, when it's on, well, it used to be more during the day. Isn't it like at nighttime now?
Yeah, they've turned it into a big primetime event.
Yeah, I used to just throw it on during the day when I do work and stuff like that. So it was pretty fun. I've only been there once. But yeah, I mean, the Combine is like Bruce's like Christmas, you know? Like,
this is the freaks list guy. And like, it's not just the like actual workouts, although you'll see here, he'll start live tweeting those. It's the people that are there, you know, it's the whole NFL world is there. Some college coaches are there, and it's like he's in a bunker right now. Like, he's not even responding to me. We usually call and text all the time. He's not off. Like, there have been times when I've been on vacation and he needed a host to fill in for me, but this may be a first that we've had to have a guest host because somebody is working too hard, basically. So, but it's good timing because much like the Combine is his Christmas, like you said, my wheelhouse is more realignment and college football playoff governance and politics. And we've got a lot of that going on right now. We actually had realignment. I think it's probably slipped under the radar. We had some realignment in the past week. We had UMass jumping conferences, but we'll get into that in a second. But you were in Dallas. You live in Dallas. You were at the meetings last week where they began discussing what the next iteration of this is going to look like when the contract comes up in 2026. And at the time Bruce and I recorded last week, all we knew really was that 14 teams was on the table, which kind of shocked people, shocked me. Like, we haven't even done 12 yet, and we're already talking about going to 14. As we suspected, this is entirely a Big Ten SEC power play, perhaps one more than the other. And so it came out yesterday that the specific format of it, or one of the ones being discussed, the Big Ten and SEC would get 3 automatic berths, the Big 12 and ACC 2, the Group of 5 1, and 3 at-large berths. In no sport in all of college sports do conferences get more than 1 automatic berth, and we're skipping ahead to 3. What's going on? How is this? How are we here?
So my first reaction to this was, this looks like the Champions League in soccer. Are you familiar with that?
No, not really. Explain.
So the Champions League is like the big tournament.
I know what
soccer.
It is, but I don't know.
It runs basically concurrently throughout the regular season. And then at the end, you have it's from the standings the year before. But basically, if you're the top if you make the top four in England, you make the Champions League. And this is the case for a lot of the biggest countries. But there are a lot of countries, a lot of different leagues in Europe. And so certain leagues, the biggest leagues, get more spots guaranteed. They get more buys. There's a league coefficient that kind of determines all of this. And so that was my first thought, was that a sport that I follow, soccer, does have something like this. But nothing in America has this. There are not two playoff spots guaranteed for the AL East or anything like that in the NBA, and certainly nothing like that in college sports. And the reason this happened, the reason this model is among others being discussed, is because the SEC and the Big Ten came to the table finally and pitched the idea of four automatic qualifying spots for themselves, which was certain to draw a lot of pushback. But you aim high, you negotiate that down. And so this is one of several models being discussed. And the reaction I've gotten from everybody I've talked to about this, all the fans that I've seen anecdotally, I've not seen a single person that likes this, like, at all. It was widely panned by everybody.
I don't even think SEC and Big Ten fans want this.
It reminds me of when realignment happened, when Texas, Oklahoma announced, when USC, UCLA announced. Fans like weren't that excited about it, you know? Like, we love the drama of realignment, but I don't get the sense a lot of people like realignment. It's just being forced upon them, and now a second playoff expansion is being forced upon fans before they've even experienced the first one. And so, you know, it's been a little more, like 15 hours since this kind of first got out, and the reaction has been widely negative, but it very well may be the thing that happens.
I think that the difference between realignment, Texas and Oklahoma joining the SEC had a, you know, a directly negative effect on another conference, which mm-hmm. then ended up eventually ripple effect killing a conference. But the, you know, silver lining, if you will, was you look at the SEC schedule this coming year, and man, you know, I want to watch Texas, Georgia, right? Like, there's no question it improves the product of that conference. Guaranteeing automatic bids before the season and expanding from 12 to 14, I think makes the playoff worse. I mean, as a fan experience, it makes it better, I guess, for the Big Ten and SEC, though, honestly, unnecessary. Like, that's the thing.
Right.
Those conferences are going to get three teams in, if not more,
this
every year.
This is the part that confuses me, because, yeah, in a 14-team field, the Big Ten SEC would get three every year. Given the at-larges, they're probably going to get four most years. And yet, it's really the ACC and Big 12, if they get a guaranteed two spots, who would perhaps be the biggest beneficiaries of all of this, because each of them only had one top 14 team among their future membership in 2023. ACC, it was Florida State. Big 12, it was Arizona. And if you're guaranteeing two spots in that top 14 every year, I think that's a pretty good deal for them, even as you implement a caste system, essentially, where you're fully, you know, settling yourself behind the SEC and Big Ten, something that may be inevitable anyway. I think, let me ask you about this. So, like, I don't hate this idea. I don't really like it. And here's the reason why. Because if you move to something like this, it is much more results oriented. There would be much more emphasis on conference standings instead of rankings. So the battle for first, second, and third place in the SEC Big Ten, the battle for first, second place in the Big Ten and Big 12 and the ACC, when you don't have divisions anymore, will be even more important. And I can understand that pitch. Again, I think I prefer the 12 team more than this, but it would completely change the way we've thought about college football. It's always been about rankings. Those determine the national champions for 100 years. Those determine BCS spots with some computer rankings. Now we've got the CFP rankings. It would totally upend the way we've kind of consumed college football.
Well, Okay. Yeah. So it would put a lot more interest on who finishes third in the Big Ten. But why would you have a conference championship game if this is going to be the
Right.
situation, right? Like, what was great about the 12 team? And by the way, I want to make clear, like, it's not to me, it's not about the number of teams in the field. Like, I'd prefer it to, I would like to see the 12 team playoff before we go expanding it. But at the end of the day, the difference between 12 and 14 is negligible. It's more about the manner in which this is being pushed through and the effect it would have on the regular season, which I think is a negative. Like, people say, oh, the 12 team's going to devalue the regular season. Well, not the way they designed it, where conference championship game, you're playing for a first round bye. There's stakes there beyond just the conference championship.
Right. That's
If
why I
we're,
like it.
yeah, if we're saying the Big Ten gets three in no matter what, why play a game in Indianapolis, right? Give those
Well,
teams,
not
I'd
like
rather, yeah,
and not only
they're
that,
both
but if you
going.
if you're the Big 12 in the ACC, you're almost never going to get that one or two seed, which get the byes. You know, so it'll almost always be Big 10 SEC teams that get the byes. If you're the Big 12 champion or the ACC champion, you're not getting a bye for winning. What is really the point of having a conference championship game?
Money. Those
Right,
conferences
that's
make
why they
money
have
off
them.
those games, especially the SEC. The SEC will never get rid of their conference championship game.
They love that thing. It's
So,
an event. It's different than all the others. It was the first one, and they've been pretty adamant they don't want to get rid of that.
oh, it's an event. I mean, if your team makes the SEC championship game and you can go, you go.
Yeah.
Whereas there have been certain matchups. Were you at the Baylor, what was it, to Baylor, Oklahoma State? Big 12
I
title
was not.
game.
I was at Cincinnati that day, which
Okay.
was very happy with that result.
I don't think the attendance was great for that one. Like when it's Texas, Oklahoma, the attendance is great.
Right.
ACC championship game is often half full.
Yeah.
So, like those could go, I think. I don't know about the SEC, but you brought up an interesting point earlier, and I saw it yesterday too. My first reaction was, hey, let me go see how this would have played out last year. It would have played out better for the ACC because they didn't have a second team in the top 14. So Louisville would get in because they need a second AQ team. And guess what team would have gotten left out in place of Louisville? LSU. So this compromise is actually could be worse for the Big Ten and SEC than if they were just play it out. And like me personally, I would rather just have just give us the top 14 teams. Don't bother dividing it by conference. However, it's ranked 1 through 14 or 1 through 12, just give us that. But I was told there's no support for that because they want because the conferences want there to be a reward for their team winning the championship.
Exactly. You want the conference championship to mean something. Also, the group of five would almost always be left out of if it was
Right.
all at large, which is why there hasn't been support for it. Greg Sankey has been on the record saying, I'm fine with all at larges. Pretty much nobody else is for the reasons that you said. It just, you know, I feel like this would have been perfect, this concept, like 20 years ago. Back when we didn't have all these conference championship games, only had a few. Back when conferences were regular sized, everybody was like 10 or 11 teams. If you took like the Power Six at the time, you guaranteed two spots for all of them, one spot for the non-BCS conference or whatever, and then add three at larges, you would get to 16 teams. I feel like it might have worked if we had gone from bowl system BCS or even before the BCS to this. But now with 18 team conferences, when you're only playing eight or nine conference games, your conference schedules could be way uneven. To have that determine your conference standings, if you finish fourth instead of third because you didn't have to play because you had to play Georgia and the other team didn't, like that I
Can you
would have a
imagine the tiebreakers? We're gonna
yeah.
there's gonna be like six teams that all go 7-2 in the Big Ten and didn't play each other. And I don't that's why I don't think this has been thought out, is what I get the sense. Like if this was really brought up for the first time in last week's meetings, that tells me nobody has actually gone and like how would this have played out the you know over the last 12 years. And obviously that's hard to do because it's not gonna be the same teams
Right.
and the same conferences. It just seems very ill-conceived to me. And
And they've only got a month to do it, by the way.
That's what Bill Hancock claims, but they've never been ones for sticking to deadlines.
Well, he's never really given it. So we went 3 years from when they first had their subcommittee meeting to come up with the 12-team playoff to eventually agreeing to the 12-team playoff 5 plus 7, which just happened. That took 3 years.
Three years.
Now, within a month, they're going to pitch 14, maybe 16 that talked about it. Auto bids. Got to figure that out. Talk about unintended consequences, things you haven't really thought out.
Revenue distribution.
Yes, which they are close on the governance. They are close on that stuff. And like all of these things will be approved together. So yes, while the Big Ten and SEC may not totally benefit from spots given the setup, they are going to be getting more money with the way things are all heading toward. So they will still have benefits that way. But yeah, ESPN, as we've reported, is getting very annoyed that this has taken so long after they've agreed.
They have a deal. They went and sold their rights to their playoff before they figured out how many teams are going to be in it and how the field was going to be decided.
Well, yeah. Well, they haven't voted on it yet. They haven't totally signed off on it, but the representatives doing the negotiations, they've come to those terms. And ESPN is annoyed with how long this has taken. And so now so that's why Bill Hancock gave us the deadline of a month. He said, we've got to get this done within the month because we got to finish with this. By the way, within that month, conference basketball tournaments are happening. Commissioners are going to be busy.
Oh yeah, they're going to be on the road for
NCAA
weeks.
Tournament. So they are going to talk next week, early next week on Zoom, to talk with their members about this. Because I talked to some people at some schools about this 3-3-2-2-1, and they hadn't really gotten the gist of it yet. That is happening later this week, depending on when you're listening to this. So they will get more feedback and go back early next week, but they have to figure this out very quickly for a big change. Oh, and by the way, we don't even know if ESPN is willing to pay much more for some additional games that would come from this.
Our colleague Andrew Marchand has made calls on that, and ESPN is not obligated to pay them a dollar more than they already agreed to. They might pitch in a little bit extra, but they value those first round games at $25 million apiece. They're not going to get another $50 million to add to. So this is, you know, again, like so much about this is out of character. And one of it is usually when these things happen, when things get bigger, it's because they want to make more money. You're not going to make more money off this. You're just going to divide the same amount of money. So one huge thing that's changed, obviously conference membership has changed, but there's been big turnover in the ranks of the commissioners, right? Yes. It's taken so long, these 3 years, that Greg Thompson from the Mountain West has retired, and Bob Bowlesby retired. And those were, by the way, were two of the people who devised the 12-team format.
Along with Notre Dame athletic director Jack Swarbrick, who is retired as well.
Yeah.
So along with Greg Sankey, three of the four people who came up with the 12-team model are already gone or on their way out.
Brett Yormark's only been on the job for a couple years. Jim Phillips only been on the job for 3 years. But the big one is Kevin Warren out at the Big Ten, goes to the Bears. There's like, I don't know, 3-4 month search. Lands on Tony Petitti as the new commissioner. Tony Petitti has been the Big Ten commissioner for less than a year. And by all indications, I've been told it, you've been told it, he, more than anybody, is the one driving all this. He has 18 schools, of which, let's say Ohio State, Michigan, Penn State, USC, Oregon, those are six programs whose fans expect to be in playoff contention. So he's the one pushing for a bigger field and at least originally four guaranteed spots for his conference. And I think that the dynamic in that room has gone from, everybody's always looking out for themselves first, but, you know, an acknowledgement that we need to, at the end of the day, do what's best for the sport and the system as a whole too. I'm the commissioner of the Big Ten. My conference is the most important. I want this. And I think it's very jarring.
And when you have the Big Ten and the SEC announce their collaborative group, whatever you want to call it, that was very much a warning shot toward everybody that they are working on something. They are going to come on something. I don't think it's a coincidence that came out. That was announced right before the CFP meeting. Everybody knew going into that last meeting that the Big Ten to SEC needed to lay things out. Talking to people in that room, they kept saying, we don't know what they want. We've had all these meetings and they haven't told us what exactly they want. What do they want to lead on? Everybody knows the Big Ten, the SEC have the most money, have the most leverage. It doesn't need to be unanimous votes for 2026 and beyond. So they just have a lot more leverage and can maybe threaten to leave or break away or do their own thing. It's been floated out there from time to time. And so now they're using that leverage in a way that I don't think benefits everybody. And with all the changes coming to college sports, with the various lawsuits, employment, all these things, the model is completely changing. And I think the Big Ten especially knows it needs to lead and be ahead of whatever this future looks like. And if that leaves people behind, so be it. And that is the future we're going in. You and I were at that that meeting in 2021 at the Hyatt Regency at DFW when they revealed the
12. When they were like, it seemed like it was a formality that they were going to sign.
Yeah, they were like, this is a, they said, everybody sacrificed. Everybody gets something out of it. It's for the good of college football. We came out of that so optimistic. Man, Group of Five's getting a spot. Notre Dame's giving up the chance to have a bye. Like, this is great. Totally, this is great.
It was probably the most selfless thing I've seen in college sports in a long time. And so, of course,
and then a month later, Texas, Oklahoma happens. And nothing's been the same. And all the commissioners from that point on didn't trust each other. They wouldn't talk to each other. The alliance was formed in response to that. Turned out to just be a ploy for the Big Ten to eventually sign its own deal a year later. Add USC, UCLA, everything falls apart from there. So it all completely fell apart from that moment. But I always remember you were there. Nicole was there. I was there. A lot of people were there. And it was just like, they later pushed back.
Kumbaya.
And said,
well, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It was so encouraging. And to see where it's come since then is extremely disheartening.
Well, I think what rubs me the wrong way about this is that, among other things, you know, look, the Big Ten and the SEC are going to be the best conferences going forward. Like, the SEC for sure. And the Big Ten is just coming off one of their teams winning a national championship. They just added Washington, who was in the national championship game. Like, they're the two best conferences. But to this point, when people would joke about it's the power two now, really the only reason for that was money, right? They make more money than the others. That was what that status meant. This is the first, I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, tangible example of those two saying, we're better than you guys. We're more important than you guys. And we're going to formalize that by giving ourselves more automatic bursts than you. And it may be that the field doesn't look much different than it would have. And people are going to watch the games and enjoy the games and not much changes, but it's just like feels very sour. Like against the spirit of what the college football playoff is supposed to be, and really sucks the oxygen out of. I've been waiting for this 12-team playoff. I've been so excited for this first 12-team playoff for 3 years. And if this gets ratified before that even starts, it's like, I mean, we've spent the last 2 years, right, doing like, this is what the 12-team field would have looked like. This is what 12. Now you're telling me, well, this is what 14 is going to look like with automatic berths. It's just going to, it's a real, I think it puts a cloud over it.
And it's also coming at a time when there's a lot more talk about expanding the NCAA basketball tournaments.
Yes.
Which is separate from the CFP. It's different organizations doing that. But I think both of these things, the NCAA tournament expansion, even if it's by 12 teams, Joe Lunardi had a column on Wednesday laying it out. TCU's athletic director told some of us the other day that he would support it because it could get, you know, maybe two or three more Big 12 teams in there. And it's something the Big 12 supports because they're such a good and deep conference.
Yeah.
And I just think like nobody likes any of that. And like, I know like things have historically changed. The NCAA tournament hasn't been 64 teams forever. That we didn't used to have a playoff. We didn't used to have a BCS. Things always change, but all of these changes, it used to feel like the changes used to be about finding better ways to find a champion. And all these changes feel like finding ways for my conference to get more money and get more spots in a tournament. And I think that turns off a lot of fans.
Yeah. Well, going to 12 was not about finding a better way to determine a champion. Cause you know, the that's not the number 12 seed's not going to win the national championship. It was actually about access, about, hey, you know, it hasn't been healthy. At that time, the Pac-12 still existed. It wasn't healthy that the Pac-12 was never in the playoff for all those years. And so here's this new system that guarantees that every part of the country has a stake in it and that the group of five has something meaningful to play for. And but this is just and by the way, the NCAA tournament is the same thing. Like, this is being driven by the consolidation of teams into these power conferences. They're so big now, they want more of their teams to be at the big dance. So do you think, and we'll move on to another topic, but do you think this is like, everybody keeps saying like, this isn't a done deal. It's just one of many things we're talking about. Is there still a possibility that something this drastic doesn't happen, that they, you know, the term that was in a couple stories yesterday was, we're socializing this, we're socializing this concept. And I don't really know what that means exactly, but I know this, it got socialized on Twitter yesterday and the reaction was overwhelmingly negative. Like, is there any chance that eventually they'll say, you know what, this is a bad idea?
Socializing means they're taking it back to their members. They're talking about this concept with athletic directors and presidents and all that kind of stuff. Because even if the commissioners agree to this, it would still need to be approved by the presidents as well. So there are a couple steps in this. Is there a chance it doesn't happen? Sure. I think it's possible. But I think it's pretty clear that the SEC and Big Ten want to move things forward in another way that's more than just we get a bigger revenue share and all these types of things. You can't guarantee anything with the playoff. Like you said, we were at that CFP meeting in 2021 and it felt like this was all but a formality. And then within a year, they said, no, we're not expanding. And then, you know, 6 months later, they did expand. So like these things change. It's hard to predict what any individual person will do. Perhaps all the backlash to it creates a reason not to change. I really like the 12-team idea. I'm going to enjoy it, but it's...
I think it's going to go to 14. I think
the problem is, if you go to 14, like you said yesterday, if you go to 14, eventually you're going to 16. Eventually you're going to whatever, you know. And like Ari Wasserman has been pounding the table forever that it shouldn't grow. I've always been saying I would love 12, no more than 12.
But brackets always grow. I just didn't think it would grow this quickly. I thought we would do 6 years of 12 teams, and then they'd probably go to 16.
But I think part of it also as well, like the TV situation has changed. ESPN, Fox, they're not throwing out unlimited money anymore. So these conferences want to get as much as they can while they can. It's why Florida State wants to get out as soon as it can. The landscape of TV changed, and that sped everything up. That sped up realignment. That sped up all of this stuff as well. One thing we didn't mention, Notre Dame, where would they fit in a 14-team?
Yeah, the 12-team format as it is now is very favorable to Notre Dame because there's seven at large spots. Now you're talking about 14-team field where there's only three at large spots.
Yeah, there may need to be some sort of threshold the way that the BCS had for the non-BCS at the time, whether that's top 14, whether that's finishing above second place teams. Because again, if Notre Dame's in the top 14 and Oklahoma State isn't, and Oklahoma State gets in the field and Notre Dame doesn't, that's going to not feel right either. So Notre Dame's got a spot to play in this as well. I hear everybody saying, well, then they should join a conference. I hear all of you on that. Notre Dame is in the room on these conversations. So TBD on.
Well, that could be another part of Tony Petitti's master plan here. Squeeze Notre Dame out of the playoff to the point where they have to join the Big Ten.
Could be. This will all be figured out in like a few weeks. Most likely they need it done by mid-March, late March. So this is going to move.
You keep saying that, but I don't believe it.
I believe it now because of the ESPN factor, because of the things we've reported on the television deal. And because Bill Hancock said we need it done in a month. He never wants to put deadlines on things because they've blown through them in the past. For the last year, every time we've had a meeting at DFW, I've asked him, when do you need to get the TV deal done by? And he'd never say. And now he's saying we got to get this done in a month.
I just remember when they were trying to approve the 12, like being in Indianapolis for the national championship game, we got to have it done in a month. We got to, you know, first it was like, we're got to have it done. It was kind of like the Pac-12 TV negotiations. They kept resetting the date until it, you know, I don't know. I mean, I imagine ESPN's not going to sit around forever. Although, what is it like? Is ESPN really going to say, that's it? We're out of the playoff business entirely? They might pull
that's
their
the
offer.
Other thing.
They might lower their offer or something. So
this proposal, because the proposal we only found out about Wednesday, the idea that certain conferences could get specific number of auto bids is crazy in the context of American sports. This doesn't happen anywhere. You know, it's really like European soccer models and global soccer again, where this happens. So
in European soccer, okay, sorry to bring this all the way back, but. So, yes, I'm fully aware that, like, the Premier League is a lot better. Everybody recognizes, right? It's a lot better league than some other European countries. But
than
is the
Dutch
difference,
league, yeah.
Is the difference, but the difference between the Premier League and the Dutch League, I would imagine, is far wider than the difference between the Big Ten and the Big 12.
Yes. Yes, like, it is. Not... It depends on the conference. There's different tiers to all of it. But it's really funny. I wrote a story last summer. I talked to several of the Athletic's soccer writers over in Europe, be like, hey, how do these things work? And one of the things one of the people said was, and the story was, you want to know what the future of college football is? It might be European soccer.
Right.
Because one of them told me, you know, the idea of the Super League, creating the Super League, that was a couple years ago. There's not much momentum for it anymore because the Premier League in England has already become the Super League. The 17th team in the Premier League is outbidding the third team in the Dutch League for a player. It's all, and that's what we have here now, where the Big Ten, the SEC have already become the power two, even if they don't have special treatment on certain things. They've already reached that point. And so we continue to kind of go down that road where, the difference between England and the Netherlands may not be that big, but the difference between England and Germany is not the difference at the top, it's the difference in the depth. The ironic thing about calling it the Champions League is that there's so many teams in it that are not champions. You know, it's not just the winner of every league that makes it in. It's four or five teams, depending on your league, or it could be fewer if you're a smaller country. That's what may happen to college football here. And based on the early returns, nobody seems to like it, except for maybe the commissioners of a couple of conferences.
The difference, I've said this many times, the difference between, like, when they announced the Super League, the reaction was so, the blowback was immediate, deafening. But one of the things that stood out to me was that included blowback from fans of the clubs that would have been in the Super League. They didn't want to leave behind their you know, neighbors and clubs that aren't really in their league anymore, in their, like, level, but that's just not the spirit of, whereas in realignment, man, it's every man for himself in college football. I mean, like, Oklahoma and Texas aren't like, their fans weren't like, oh, I feel so bad we're leaving Texas Tech behind. They're like, see ya, we're off to make more money. And that's
Soccer fans, especially in Europe, there's so much more agency. They feel like they have control. There's supporter sections. They, you know, they have some control over clubs, so to speak, a little bit. In college sports, in American sports, we don't really have that same amount of passion in that fans feel like they can make a change. You can protest a coach. You can wear paper bags on your head and say, sell the team and all these types of things. But the fans are typically ignored in that situation. And I feel like there's more of an acceptance of these things that are going to be forced upon us if you're an American sports fan, whether that's an advertisement on a jersey, whether that's changing a conference, whether that's jerseys that look terrible in MLB. American fans just kind of have to take it. And the Super League fell apart because the fans freaked out about it. And so if there's a huge backlash to this 14-team proposal, maybe, but
I don't, it would have to be, I don't know. Fans have always come in last in these decisions. Realignment was not made in the interest of the fans. All decisions in college sports are made in the interest of who will pay, you know, what will give us more money. And by the way, as much as I like the 12-team playoff format, I mean, making fans travel to three straight neutral site games is not fan friendly at all.
Yep.
But they're just going to do it and expect people to, first you had to pay for your seat license and your season tickets. Now they want you to literally help them pay for the talent, like pass out the hat. We need your help. Throw money into the NIL collective. It's just one ask after another. But you know what? Then the season starts and the TV, and we get, you know, every week highest TV rating since 2017 and whatnot. So to this point, it has not affected interest in the product. There may be a tipping point at some point.
Looking for an assist with your credit card, but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
All right. Well, that was depressing. you know, one of your many hats you wear at The Athletic is you're the Group of Five guy. You're a Group of Five guru. And we had Group of Five realignment this week. So UMass, independent in football and not a very good one at that, but longtime Atlantic 10 member in their other sports, is joining the MAC. This might not seem all that significant, but one thing I would say is, one thing about the MAC is they were the one conference throughout all of this that remained unaffected. They never lost any schools. They never gained any schools. And I feel like, and I haven't looked it up, maybe you know, how long this current 12-team lineup has been in place. It feels like decades. I remember Marshall was in the MAC when Randy Moss was there.
I'll tell you when it is. It's been since 2015 because UMass was in the MAC as a football member from 2012 to 2015.
Okay. And I've completely forgotten about that.
Yeah. And the MAC wanted UMass to bring all of its members, all of its sports. UMass didn't want to do it. The sides agreed to part ways. UMass went independent, stayed in the A-10, and now they're coming back together just with all the sports this time.
So that tells you they realized right on the wall, we have to have a conference for our football program. Why does the MAC, what does the MAC gain from adding UMass football?
Well, I mean, not a ton. They're not good, but there's numbers. And, you know, UMass has talked with Conference USA and the MAC. Delaware did the same thing. It is kind of strange that one went to Conference USA, Delaware, moving up from FCS. One went to the MAC. It would have made more sense probably if the two of them were together. But this is how things work sometimes. And yeah, you want to get in a conference at this point because there's more money in a conference. There is access to the playoff if you're in a conference. I know UMass is probably not making the playoff, but there's money in various things. You're involved more in rules and discussions and that type of stuff. Being independent in football is not fun at all. And that's why pretty much everybody has left it. Army's joining the American this year in football. Liberty and New Mexico State won the Conference USA, and now UMass is out. That just leaves UConn and quasi Notre Dame. So, you know, when the MAC almost expanded in a couple years ago, they talked to Western Kentucky and Middle Tennessee, and eventually Middle Tennessee said, "Nah, we don't want to do it. We want to stay in Conference USA. We'll get a bunch of money for staying."
What's a bunch of money at that level? Like these conferences.
A few million dollars from all the exit fees and entrance fees from everybody changing that conference. They use that money to helped build a building and to buy out Rick Stockstill just recently. Western Kentucky was still willing to join the MAC at the time, a couple of years ago. They said, we'll still come if you invite us. MAC didn't want to get to an odd number, deciding not to do it. But they stayed in contact with various schools over the years. And so now US is going. Will they go more? Will they try Western Kentucky? Hear different things from different people on that. But I think UMass really wanted to get into a conference, and the MAC it is.
So this leads us to the topic that my mailbag readers on The Athletic are unusually interested in. As you said, we're now down to the only independents are Notre Dame and UConn. And it would sure seem like UConn is out there kind of in football purgatory. Like, this is a program that once upon a time was in a BCS conference and actually won that conference and went to the Fiesta Bowl. And, you know, obviously it's gone downhill since. Credit to our man Jim Mora for a bowl season last year. They went back to 3-9. It just doesn't seem like this is a sustainable thing for UMass, for UConn football. But if you bring up the idea of them joining the MAC, oh boy, their fans want nothing to do with that.
They don't want to do it. I first reported a couple years ago that UConn was in discussions with Conference USA about being a football-only member at the time that they added Liberty and New Mexico State and all them. Backlash was extremely fierce to that, and UConn decided not to do it. I've made the case that I feel like it'd be better to be in a conference, whether that's the MAC or Conference USA, because then you have something to play for. You have players of the week. You have conference awards. You have standings. You have reasons to pay attention to other teams in your conference. And they, UConn fans always tell me no. They'd rather be independent. They'd rather play some more Power 5, Power 4 games. They'd rather play some more of those Northeastern teams. I think Army leaving for the American, though, is a bit of a shot to that. So
and UMass. They can always rely on playing UMass, but that maybe that won't be the case moving forward.
So it's I don't know if anything changes, but they've also held out that they didn't want to join a conference of football because they thought a Power 5 invitation could come. And there were talks about the Big 12, you know, back last year. So I don't know. I don't know if this will change things or not. It will be harder to schedule some games. I think I just saw Army and UConn had to reschedule some games, speaking of that. So in response to the UMass news I saw from UConn fans anecdotally was they're fine. It didn't change their opinions on things. So I don't know. They really don't want to be associated with the teams in those conferences, as harsh as that is. They feel like they're above that. They were in the Big East, all these other things. They don't want to be talked about alongside Central Michigan or Liberty or New Mexico State and all these, or Middle Tennessee. And
who do they think they're being talked about now? I mean, look, UConn basketball is a juggernaut, and the smartest thing that school did was go to the Big East, even though it hurt their football program. Go back to the Big East, I mean. Mm-hmm. Like, there were, you remember, there was a few years there when UConn was in men's and women's, was in the AAC, and they were kind of out of sight, out of mind. And they went back to the Big East, and now they're a national power again. But it's left the football program in this, I mean, they're not good. There's no other way around it. And so, yes, I saw the talk of, you know, last year there were rumors that the Big 12 was interested in them. I think Brett Yormark was interested in them. I don't think his members were. And then just this, like, outplaced, I don't know how to describe it, but, like, they really think, like, the ACC, not only should they be in it, but that the ACC is making a mistake by not taking UConn. And all I can say is none of these power conferences want a football program that could be completely non-competitive, that could go in and just be like what Vanderbilt basically is in the SEC. Like, you're talking, you know, there's a lot of money in these football TV contracts. You don't want to water down your schedule like that. So somehow UConn has to, like, basically, if the only way they're going to get in a power conference is to get out of this cycle of mediocrity, is being kind, right? Mm-hmm. And prove that you could possibly play at that level. But I don't know how you do that when you're out in this wasteland, hard to recruit. And the money, I mean, UConn, as I looked it up, UConn football lost $16 million last year. And UConn, as a athletic department, is running such a huge deficit. They're getting like $30 million of subsidy from their university to be able to run their athletic department. How long can that go on? I know Rutgers has done that for like seemingly eternity, but this is not working for football.
Yeah, look, what happens if Florida State leaves and Clemson leaves and the ACC needs to scramble and add some schools? Maybe UConn becomes one of them. Maybe Washington State and Oregon State become one of them. I think, you know, I think you see, I mean, you see with Washington State and Oregon State, they are trying to just delay things for 2 years.
Yes.
They've got things scheduled. They got Mountain West games. They're in the West Coast Conference for everything else. They've got a 2 year grace period to figure it out. And instead of just joining the Mountain West, which a lot of other people want them to do, they're waiting because they're saying, who the heck knows what it's like in 2 years? And could the ACC fall apart? Need somebody? Who knows? And I think UConn is probably in the back of their minds for football, thinking about that as well. This is a school that they still invest in football. Like, they just renovated the locker rooms recently, you know, hiring Jim Moore as an investment there. But yeah, it's just out of sight, out of mind. You never think about them at all. And I don't think that's a good place to be. I think they should join the MAC or Conference USA, but everybody I talk to around there doesn't want to do it.
I've got a more radical suggestion, but they will never do it. I think they should drop football to FCS. When they were in FCS, they were actually good. They made the playoffs. And you would spend a lot less money. Your expenses would be a lot less. But, you know, this is, like you said, it's a fan base that thinks they should be in a power conference, not FCS.
Right. By the way, the only one team has done that. Only one team has voluntarily dropped from FBS to FCS since the split in the 1970s. That was Idaho, which has now become a top 10 FCS
exactly.
team.
Exactly.
UConn could be a lot of fun doing it.
UConn could be a thriving FCS football program. They would definitely have one of the biggest stadiums, if not the biggest stadium in FCS. They would start out at a higher resourced. And you'd actually have something to play for.
And you could have a Northeastern based conference. Villanova's up there, Albany, Lehigh. You know, there are a lot more FCS programs up in the Northeast than there are FBS.
Well, the thing about college sports is it's not run like a normal business. It's very largely dictated by emotion and feelings and spite and all those things. And it doesn't necessarily make the most sense from a business perspective, but it's also what makes college sports
also great. By the way, when Idaho made that move, by the way, they ran the president and the AD out of town eventually, for not just because of that, but there was a lot of backlash toward them at the time. So nobody wants to be the person to do that. Nobody wants to be the person to say, hey, we're going to voluntarily take a step down or do this. You have to constantly be saying we're striving to be the best. Look at UConn basketball. It's one of the best teams in the country. We know UConn can do this. We aim to do that in football, and we feel like somebody eventually would come around for us. Whether that's real or not, I don't know, but that's what keeps the money coming in as well.
All right, Chris, would you like to pinch hit for Bruce on the mailbag?
Let's do it.
All right, and I realize that I haven't actually sent you the questions. You're going to be kind of on the spot here, but I think you can handle them. I love this one from Brian Black. Big fan of the podcast. With Jim Harbaugh leaving Michigan for the Chargers, he is trying to become the fourth coach ever to win both a Super Bowl and a national championship, joining Pete Carroll, Barry Switzer, and Jimmy Johnson. Only one college coach since 1980 has won at least four national titles, Nick Saban. Kirby and Dabo are halfway there. Which accomplishment is harder to achieve? Four national titles or winning both a Super Bowl and a national title?
I'm going to say Super Bowl now because of the era that we're in. Some of those Alabama national championships came when previous teams may have not gotten mulligans in the past. I think it's easier now for a top team to win a championship than maybe it used to be. A true championship. I guess you could make the case, hey, you could get a split national championship and make the case, but I think we've seen over the last 12 years of the CFP, it's only the same couple of teams doing it. I'm going to say Super Bowl and national championship is harder because winning a Super Bowl is so, so hard.
I'm going to agree with you because I think, to your point, winning a national championship in college football is hard. Let's not suggest that it's not. But what you can do is once you get to where Georgia is or Alabama is, you then become like kind of a self-fulfilling prophecy. You right. can recruit the best classes because you already have the best players and you're winning championships. And so it becomes kind of a self-sustaining thing. In fact, as Dan Wetzel likes to say, only in college sports do you, if you're the best program, you then get to sign five first round picks in the next class.
Right. Pro sports are socialism.
Pro sports is parity.
They get the first pick and all that stuff. I think also there's a larger pool of teams that can win a Super Bowl in a given year than there are college teams. Like, the pool is smaller as a college team. So if you're one of those teams, if you're in Ohio State or Georgia, you're going to be in that mix every single year. You know, NFL, it's a lot harder. You go up and down. It's tougher.
Kalen DeBoer leaves Washington for Alabama because, in large part, because he is now one of the half dozen or so programs, maybe we'll say, where the pieces are in place to win a national championship, right? There's a very small, finite group. Jim Harbaugh basically just picked one out of 32 out of a hat. Like, mm-hmm. the Chargers, yeah, they have Justin Herbert, but like, over the long term, there's no guarantee that they'll can turn into a one. You know, they have no big advantage over the Bengals or the whoever, right? Like, they're just, he's gotten himself a home, and that's great. Now you have the entry point. But in terms of like being able to build a Super Bowl contender there versus some other team in the NFL, frankly, kind of random. So we're in agreement there. You know, college sports is so hectic right now that we haven't even had a chance to address the fact that pay for play is now legal, now the law of the land, thanks to a ruling in Tennessee. Jerry Swider, if NIL deals can be used as an inducement to attend a given school now, can they also be used as a form of pay to play? Will NIL contracts be able to specify that absent injury, a player must play in postseason games to earn all the contractual compensation? Do you think collectives would want to include such a stipulation in NIL contracts? I don't think they can do that still. When I said pay for play just now, I was referring to recruiting. The judge's ruling was basically saying it's an antitrust violation to not allow these players to even negotiate like what their compensation is going to be before they pick the school, right? The line mm-hmm. that the plaintiffs used in one of their complaints was it would be like having to accept a job offer before you negotiate the salary.
Right.
But you still can't pay them to, you know, do tied to performance on the field. That wasn't really part of this. Now, could you put in, when I saw this question, my thought was, well, could you put in like a bonus? Could you say, you know, and you know, you'll make X amount of money in NIL appearances. And if our team reaches the playoff and you're on the team, like you're still there, you could get a $100,000 bonus or something like that. That's a little more gray area, but at least it wouldn't be like a requirement to get your money.
This actually came up in our talk with Jeremiah Donati, the TCU AD, on Wednesday. Someone said, the question was, how do you get players to play in bowl games, essentially? And his idea was, if you're a collective, have one of the payments be scheduled for January 15th.
Yeah.
You know, and you got to be on the roster at the time, essentially. I don't know if that's legal or whatnot, but that was just an idea that was thrown out there. Different collectives do things different ways. I think one of the most interesting perspectives on this came from Jason Belzer, who he runs some NIL stuff. He's like an attorney for some coaches and stuff like that. And he's pushed a lot of these very pro NIL people in the media will say all these different things. He has a perspective yesterday that this could help because it will force collectives to put a lot more things in writing, to be more transparent about different things. He thinks this being legal will force more of it to come to light and could ultimately help everybody. And I think that's something everybody agrees probably needs to happen, just so everybody knows what they're getting into. Because there are some really shady middlemen involved in all of this. And the more open it becomes, the more transparent it becomes, eventually, if it moves underneath the school, which a lot of schools want to happen now. You know, they've had a couple of years of the collectors running things, and they're saying, let's bring this in house. The NCAA is talking about letting that happen. It could make things a lot just clearer for everybody.
I don't think the collectives are going to go away, but the schools could they could like at least be folded into the athletic department, and the schools will have oversight over them. And that was a good point about the timing. I haven't seen many NIL contracts. It's very secretive, but the ones I have seen, like, they never say you have to be a member of the Alabama football team to collect this money. That they have other ways to make it impossible. You know, like, you have to be at this place at this date in Tuscaloosa, Alabama. I'm using this hypothetically. I've not seen an Alabama NIL contract. And so, yeah, if you say, like, we're going to give you a 2-year deal, and the payments are going to be on these dates, and the last one's going to be on January 23rd, you know, 20, well, then yeah, I guess to get that money, you'd have to still be on the team. So good call there. All right. Always a popular question from Russell B in Austin, Texas. If Ryan Day loses to Michigan for a fourth time in a row, given how they won the offseason, is there any chance he would get fired? What about after a fifth loss in a row to Michigan? The answer to the second one is yes. Well, but what do you think about this year?
So the idea is he would get fired after the Michigan game and before the playoff?
Doesn't specify.
Because we presume Ohio State is making the playoff in a 12-team field. And that's the thing that kind of throws a wrench into all the ways we used to think about how we grade coaches. What if he beats Michigan, loses to Michigan again, but they win three games and make the national championship game?
And kind of what almost happened the year before, right? They lost to Michigan.
Or win, exactly.
Still made the playoff, almost beat Georgia.
What if in the playoff he beats an Ole Miss, a Georgia, an Oregon, and then loses in the championship game to, I don't know, Tennessee or something like that? Like that, does that change things? I think it would. And so, yeah, I mean, this kind of comes into play. I earlier this week released the regrading of the 2018-2019 coaching carousel. I've done this 3 years in a row. I look back 5 years. I look at how everybody graded it at the time and how we regrade it now. You gave Ryan Day a B+ when he was promoted to the job. The highest grade, actually, that anybody else gave him. CBS gave him a C. SB Nation gave him a B. You gave him a B+. I regraded him as an A-, in that he's 56-8, 39-3 in the Big Ten, 3 playoff appearances, 2 Big Ten championships. He's done a good job with everything he's had, but he's 1-3 against Michigan, and now Michigan is a national championship program. So we've seen, you know, John Cooper get run out of town for having a really good program that couldn't beat Michigan. I just think in today's playoff
world, took 12 years for him to get run out of town.
Right, that too. But also we live in a different postseason world.
Yeah.
Where you have a playoff and you can have really big seasons while still losing to Michigan, which is something Ari Wasserman would be quick to point out is bad about playoff expansion.
So my first thought was, if he loses to Michigan for a fourth year in a row, with Ross Bjork now as the AD, Ross Bjork fired Jimbo Fisher despite having to pay a $75 million buyout.
That he gave the extension for, by the way.
That he gave the extension for. Yeah, I could see him firing him. But you're right. Now there's a new playoff. But here's the thing. Schools that fire their coach generally do it right after the regular season because they want to get a head start. They want to be able to hire the next coach, get started on the coaching carousel, or get started on portal. They're probably going to be moving the early signing day up now to like right after the conference championship game. The week of the conference championship game.
And possibly the summer. Possibly the summer.
So let's say he loses to Michigan, and let's just say it's their second loss. So they finish 10-2. They're probably still going to make the playoff, but we don't know yet. I think he would probably have to make the decision then and there. And then if they end up going to the national championship game under some interim coach, great. But I don't think the way the calendar works, you can wait to see, well, you know, everybody's pissed off at him. He can't believe he lost again. But let's wait and see if he redeems himself in December and early, because the playoff's going to go till January 20th.
Yes. Well, that's the other thing, though. A job like Ohio State, you can probably find a really good replacement at any time. We just saw Nick Saban retire in mid-January, and I hired the coach who just played in the national championship game. So Ohio State could wait through the playoff, fire Ryan Day, and then hire somebody who had a really good run in the playoff if they want to go that way. I think this most recent coaching cycle, with all the fallout from Nick Saban, kind of maybe puts a dent in that belief that you have to have your new head coach before the first portal window happens. I think things can be a little bit different now, and depending on where you are. Ohio State will always be able to get almost anybody it wants to be its head coach. That's why Ryan Day's grades 5 years ago were not very good, because they were saying you could probably do better than this. You could get anybody you want. They just right. promoted from within. So I don't know. We'll have to see. We don't know how the playoff is going to change everything. We don't know how it's going to change how recruiting works, how the portal works, how we judge coaches when firings happen. Are we going to fire a coach who's in the playoff and have him go with an interim coach? Be like Frieder at Michigan basketball 1989 national championship? I mean, like,
could happen. Could happen.
It's possible. We don't know yet until somebody does it.
Ohio State basketball is playing a lot better since they changed coaches. Maybe they go on a miracle run, win the Big Ten tournament, and go to the NCAAs. I just had another thought in along these lines, though. We're also seeing the effect of the 30-day, when you fire the coach, everybody gets, or the coach leaves, everybody gets a 30-day window to transfer, regardless of when it happens. So would you be better off waiting until January to kind of run out the clock on those guys?
Because then the guys can enter the portal but don't have anywhere to go.
Right.
Because enrollment schools have already started. You know, that is something. It's why this spring transfer portal cycle is going to be really weird, because you're going to have a lot of coaches who weren't really involved in it the first time around.
And so I think the spring portal window is going to be very heavy on Alabama players, Washington players, Arizona players, Michigan players.
They need some guys.
Yeah. Well, it's going to be very heavy on guys that didn't get a chance to leave those schools in December. Mm-hmm. I don't know if they'll be good players, but players from those schools. And then, yeah, like, there's going to be, I think, a higher profile of players that leave their other schools to go to. Alabama needs players, right? Michigan mm-hmm. needs players. Here's my shot.
Exactly. Going to be interesting.
All right. This has been a very interesting discussion. And we didn't hit as many topics as I thought I would, because we just got so deep into that playoff. I'm very interested to see how this plays out, because didn't you get the sense last week, like, for us in this bubble, the news that they might try to do this power play and go to 14 was a really big deal. But because it was tied into them finally approving the 5+7 for the current model, I know it's very confusing. I think it just kind of got lost in the shuffle. Like, that was the news.
Now it's jumped like, on everybody jumped on 5+7. Like, it was new. We had a whole, there was a news cycle about Notre Dame for all the people who weren't paying attention.
Yeah,
to
well,
what the playoff was.
Not everybody because follows this as closely as we do, and it's been going on for 3 years. So I understand the confusion, right?
Because, like, it was 3 years of talk and figuring out the details before when to play. All of a sudden, Stephen A. Smith's talking about Notre Dame. It's like, Notre Dame was part of the group that came up with the 12-team playoff. They're cool with it. And so, yeah, everybody reacted to 5+7. I got some TV requests that next day. Hey, can you come on and talk about what 5+7 means? I was like, wait a day.
That was a formality,
I was like, there's a meeting tonight where bigger stuff may happen. Can I come on tomorrow?
Right.
And so the 14th thing happened. Also, it happened right around dinner time. It was late in the day when the 14th stuff started to come out. And so I think it kind of just got lost in the shuffle a bit. And people may not realize this has to be figured out within a month. People may not realize it may expand in 2 years. So these things, college sports, it's never a simple news cycle. There's always 50 steps to get through. People are never sure when something is officially happening or not. And I think this was one of them. Because if we next week even say commissioners have recommended a 14-team model, everyone's going to blow up, be like, what happened? Because they didn't see it happen last week. So these things happen in stages.
All right, Chris, we've gone an hour. I really appreciate you taking the time. Bruce will be back next week, I think. No, I assume he will be. You can hear Chris and many of our colleagues on Until Saturday, are extremely popular. The Athletic's extremely popular College Football Podcast that is also a YouTube show. Please tell me you're going to live stream when NCAA football comes out. Please tell me you and Ari, others, are going to live stream on YouTube playing the game for the first time.
Yeah, we're still trying to figure out what the details are. Me, Ari, Ubin, Max, some other people. We want to get the listeners, the viewers involved, whether it's a league or something. We haven't exactly figured out what, but we're going to try to get everybody involved because that is going to take up a lot of our late summer when that comes out.
Awesome. All right. Thanks, Chris. And listeners, send your emails to theaudiblepod@gmail.com. We'll see you next time.